T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This hour is brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto, online at CarX.com.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Well, we're not eliminated. I got good news with the scans yesterday, so I plan on playing this week.
Yeah. You're still playing in the NFL? You're still playing?
I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Shut up.
I usually say let's talk some basketball or let's talk some football, but I don't know. Let's just talk sports.
I mean, I don't even know. Like, I haven't asked Jim about this, but I imagine he probably has a thought on the White Sox, too, if you want it.
Jim Ozarski is on Twitter at Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com, former Packers beat reporter, joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and he's on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Good to talk, Jim. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm good. And yeah, Lawrence, I mean, the Sox stuff is, I don't know. That's not a happy place. It hasn't been.
No, it hasn't been a happy place for us either. And neither is the Bulls, quite honestly. I'm curious, as someone who covers Milwaukee, but obviously grew up watching Bulls basketball, what do you see when you see them?
It's a good effort. I can appreciate what AK and those guys tried to do, and I think the Lonzo Ball situation is unfortunate, but we could talk about guys like roster construction. If one player goes down, like, the whole house of cards shouldn't go with it, especially because you don't think Lonzo is like that dude, right, in terms of the hierarchy of the team. But I just feel like, you know, the Vooch, LaVine, DeRozan trio was sort of an odd fit, and Lonzo was just sort of the guy that held that together and made it work. And then there's the trickle-down with Caruso and everyone else down the bench. And I just feel like that, like, last year, a healthy quartet was sort of the ceiling. I think it was real, guys, like how they played together when they were at the top of the East. I do think if the draw was correct for them, i.e. Boston, Milwaukee on one other side, they could have reached a semi or conference final. But I think that was the ceiling. And now that it's kind of over, I think they are trending back into that area that no one wants to be in as a basketball fan, which is middling of the conference, no high lottery picks, and just what do you do with these salaries?
And yet they beat the Bucks up there in to start the road trip in what's probably their win of the year when everything kind of went right.
They did. Look, it was tremendously executed game plan for Billy Donovan and the Bulls. I turned to the press row when DeMar DeRozan hit a three-pointer. I said, DeMar DeRozan's taking threes? Okay, like they're tired of getting stomped by the Bucks. I believe that's just their second regular season win in 5 years against Milwaukee. They came out, Javonte Green's hitting threes, Patrick Williams. They went away from that later, but I think there was some pride there. And sure, it gives hope, but I haven't seen the Bulls do that on a night in, night out basis. I mean, it's there, right? You got three All-Stars. But I don't know if they can tap into that on you know, that kind of regular level.
that playoff series between the two teams was like the last time we saw Chris Middleton. And I know that you've written the story on Middleton and him getting back to the Bucks. What's gone into getting him available to play?
Yeah, this has been, you know, the story of, well, aside from Giannis flipping a ladder. I mean, but this has really been the story of the Bucks season so far. I mean, he had wrist surgery in July, and I think people were wondering, why is it December 2nd that he's returning? And it is that Bulls series, Lawrence. It's all tied together. So that was in April. He had to let that partially torn MCL heal. So he did, and then the surgery was in July. So he did no basketball activity from that game two of that Bucks Bulls series until the last couple weeks. So the wrist is fine, the knee is fine. He just needed a lot of time to get his body back together in order to return. So now, yeah, the Bucks are 15-5 without a three-time All-Star. So yeah, they're feeling pretty good about where they're headed at this point.
That whole situation with the ladder was just bizarre, and it spawned even now still some hilarious memes. There's an Instagram piece that has the ladder angry that it's knocked over, going to run on the treadmill and lift weights and come back and perform on the court because the ladder itself was disrespected. It was just a very strange situation, and Montrezl Harrell's reaction, it also seemed a little bit out of character for Giannis to be that in a little bit of look at me, a little bit of selfishness when it came to moving some stadium workers out of you don't do that on the road, I don't think.
It was very strange, Dan. And being there in Philly, I think it was just a confluence of events that started with Harrell taking the ball from him during his post-game shoot-around as it is. I mean, I don't know how often this happens at the UC. In Milwaukee, opposing teams, I've seen Jabari Parker, I forget which iteration of Jabari it was, which team, but he was out there doing sprints. He didn't play, so he was out there doing sprints one game and, you know, getting up some shots. So I've seen that. I don't know if Harrell's instigation just added to it, but you're right. I mean, he shouldn't have knocked the ladder over. He shouldn't have been touching it. You know, and I don't know who that falls on, if that's Giannis, if that's Buck security, if that's the worker. But it was of his career, he goes viral for like playing with dinosaurs and talking about cookies and, you know, whatever else. So this was definitely a viral moment unlike he's ever experienced.
Yeah, that's kind of the weird part about it too, Jim, is that this is a guy that is kind of the everyman superstar. And to see him like not be that was jarring.
Yeah, it was strange, especially just that video itself. And he did get some pushback because it does come across as here's the superstar moving the everyman out of the way, like quite literally, yep, to do my thing. I do think a couple things helped him. One, I think it was like midnight central on a Friday night. Before a football weekend. I mean, so it did, of course, get around, but I think he has built up enough sort of goodwill in that way where I don't know. I don't think this is going to trail him like maybe it would have some other players.
Do you have Tim Boyle intel for us?
And do we need it? Do we want it?
Look, he has the nickname The Laser Show in Green Bay. I mean, I don't know if Bears fans want to see the laser show, meaning laser rocket arm, the whole Peyton Manning bit commercial from years ago. He can sling it. I don't know if he can sling it well. You know, I mean, he's well enough to be in the league as a backup. Nice guy. I don't think he's going to talk about reptile people, at least not yet. So there's that, I guess.
Well, that's good that he's not going to do that. But obviously, like you covered Aaron Rodgers. Getsy was – you covered him too, right, before you went over to the Bucks?
Yes. So Getsy came in with LaFleur. So I was here for that first year, two-ish years. My timeline gets messed up, but yeah.
Well, I think it's really interesting that we've seen him with Fields move from what they wanted to do initially to actually crafting – an offense around Justin Fields. It surprises me because, you know, like you, we've talked about guys that are so dogmatic about their scheme. And to see an NFL coach adjust like that, I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it speaks to Luke's overall background. Like, make no mistake, he got this job because of what the Packers did these last couple years. I don't doubt that. But I think the fact, yeah, I think it was a cup of coffee calling plays in college. But the fact that he was a receivers coach under Mike McCarthy with those great receiver rooms in Green Bay, that's a completely different offense. And the fact that he was there when McCarthy sort of began to tailor what was that, like, tried and true West Coast system around the talent of Aaron Rodgers. Like, I think it's easy to forget that because Rodgers has been up there for so long and there's all this other stuff, but that happened. And Luke Getsy was a part of that. Now, also in these last few years, there was the LaFleur Shanahan system plus Rodgers marriage. And while we can, that's a whole other show on how that's gone, but it has worked in the sense of winning games and the quarterback playing well. And again, that wasn't just fitting a system to a QB or vice versa. So I think Getsy has that flexibility. I mean, obviously he's never had a quarterback like this. So I think that's also been interesting to watch him sort of embrace that and Justin Fields be able to excel in it.
What's the talk about the face plant that Nathaniel Hackett is in the midst of making?
On one hand, it just seems like there's too much let's ride up there. Like, he's so similar in personality to Russell Wilson. Like, it makes Hackett great and fun to be around. And I think, and look, the Packers, look, he didn't call plays in Green Bay, but they loved him for that stuff. But when your quarterback is also that guy, that's as big an issue, I think, as maybe him. And the growing pains of time management and clock management, like, I think that, I don't know how unexpected that should be. But obviously the expectations in Denver were really high. But yeah, that's a lot of just that in Denver right now.
I know that it's been a while since you covered Aaron Rodgers, but I'm curious, for someone who has covered him, what is the last, let's call it 3 years, been like watching him maybe turn into himself or turn into a different person?
I think this has been Aaron Rodgers to a degree the last handful of years. I mean, he's been obviously in the league 20 years. I think what was interesting was the decision to sort of shed the veneer, shed the jacket, whatever you want, the armor, whatever you want to call it, of, because he kept everything at a distance, which is fine. Like, Dan Lawrence, you covered Michael Jordan and some of these guys who were there, right, where they needed that shield. I don't know if it was the personal life stuff where the people he was engaged to or dating brought about new attention, if it was he just got tired of the anonymous sources speaking for him. I think he's even said that at times. So that's been interesting. He was so careful, guys, so careful about just sort of being the right guy, saying the right things, doing the right things, to just, you know, it's him. I don't think he's lying about any of this stuff, which is kind of scary, depending what we're talking about, right?
Hey, who would? If you were
creating a character, right, this would be a bad one to create.
Unless it's a professional wrestling heel, like, who would be a phony doing this?
I mean, it does. I mean, that does kind of fit into the Pat McAfee thing, though.
Yeah.
the heel turn aspect of it.
Yeah. Look, Aaron's a really smart guy. Well, when I say smart guy, I think we also need to separate that too. Like, let's be real here. Like, some of these things he's talked about or has been attributed to him are not so smart. But, like, in terms of football, he's a smart guy. He is intelligent in conversations, and you can talk to him. And I always had to prepare, guys. I don't know if you've had this with athletes, but, like, ready to talk to him one-on-one, I felt I had to be sharp and be ready for follow-ups. And to be questioned back. But that I'm saying that because I could see him leaning into a bit to a degree. Maybe that's what the COVID toe thing was, you know. But yeah, it's probably too extreme to say, oh, this is totally not him.
Before we let you go, I want to go back to the team that you cover now, the Bucks. I'm curious what you think of the Eastern Conference and the league itself, and if there's anything that you think the Bucks have done well over the last couple of years that put them in a position, not just because of Giannis, but put them in a position to be a team that competes for a championship again.
Yeah, they doubled down on continuity. And I know that was a buzzword with Billy Donovan and the Bulls, and then how long did that last? So it was like, well, we're still trying to figure each other out. Like, I think 14 of the 17 on the current roster for the Bucks, including the two ways, saw minutes for them last year. I mean, and if you go back to the start of the Budenholzer era, back when Giannis's first MVP 5 years ago, there's almost half the roster. Same thing with the title. I mean, they've decided that continuity, despite age, is the way to go to maintain through injury, illness, guys having off nights, because they've experienced all that, and yet they still win at a high level, again, around Giannis, Lawrence. A lot of teams preach continuity. I think Boston at 18-4, Milwaukee at 15-5, Phoenix at 15-6, despite their issues. That's a real common thread. Yes, great players and all-stars, but like true continuity, like multiple seasons of guys accepting roles from a third-year 22-year-old to a 15-year 36-year-old.
Jim Ozarski, this is great. Really appreciate all of the wide-ranging knowledge and opinions.
I appreciate having me on. It's always good to be talking to you guys in the hometown.
I just like saying Jim Ozarski because it's that's a Chicago name if I've ever heard it. It's fun.
It is. I'm so proud I didn't drift into my South Side accent with some hard D's instead of T-H's.
Well, we could have gone more into the White Sox thing, but that's
No, no,
no.
Yeah. I don't want to.
No, all right. Well,
I don't want to either, Lawrence.
No, you're right, Jim. Be good, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
That's Jim Ozarski. He's a man who used to cover the North, and I'm sure that he's got thoughts on how one could take the North.
Look at you,
like the Take the North podcast,
just like it,
just like that with our guys. Dan Wiederer and David Hall, they break down all the big stories each week that are going on at Hallis Hall. They give you lively opinion, some good debate, some fact-finding, some context. That's what those two guys are all about. The Take the North podcast, wherever it is that you can find your podcast.
Maybe you're thinking, hey, it's Thursday, but where's Matt Bowen? Where's Charch? Matt Bowen had a scheduling conflict. He is going to join us tomorrow.
You have to get sized up for his state championship ring.
Uh-huh, another one. Another one.
That's right.
And Charch is under the weather, so he's not going to be joining us this week either. So that's why that. We're going to do something different in the next segment. I don't know if you saw the news. The last holdout, the last independent bowl that was preventing the powers that be in college football from expanding the playoff to 12 teams.
Sooner.
The Rose Bowl has decided, okay, fine, we'll take our share of a gazillion dollars rather than holding out for no apparent reason because there's a certain TV slot we liked. And now it looks like the expansion to 12 teams from 4 is going to occur in 2024 instead of 2025. Big Ten Network's Dave Revzin will give us his thoughts on that next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I'm 100% supportive for college football playoff expansion. What is that right number? We'll figure it out. I'm confident we will get college football playoff expansion resolved.
Well, it took long enough, but they finally had enough leverage over the Rose Bowl to get it done. Here to talk about that and the news that was made by that happening is Dave Revson of Big Ten Network, the lead studio host, who is on Twitter at BTN Dave Revson, and who joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello again, Dave.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Lawrence. How are you guys?
We are doing really well. We thank you. We know that your time is always limited, so we appreciate you being able to jump on with us. What does this mean, where the Rose Bowl acquiesced to the wants and needs of the CFP?
Well, this was kind of the last hurdle here, Lawrence, that in order for them to start, this is basically about whether the college football playoff was going to expand to 12 in 2024 or whether it was going to happen when the contract expired in 2026. And so there were some things written into the contract that they're currently working under that guaranteed the Rose Bowl certain time slots, the time slot that it has always had for time immemorial. And this was the Rose Bowl saying they were willing to move off of that slot in these early years here in order for this to happen in 2024 rather than 2026. So really what happened today was just that we moved up the time for expanding the playoff by 2 years. That it's going to happen at the earliest possible time rather than when the current contract expires.
What were the things that the Rose Bowl over the last couple of years, as this has come up in discussion, have been concerned about when it comes to their place in the CFP?
Well, I think it all boils down to, for the Rose Bowl, Lawrence, they want to have the game at the same time they've always had it, on New Year's Day. They want to have the parade that day in conjunction with the Rose Bowl. They want the sun to set over the San Gabriel Mountains when the fourth quarter starts. I mean, that's really important to the people in Pasadena. And I will say, like, I get that people kind of collectively roll their eyes at some of that stuff. I don't know if either of you's been to a Rose Bowl. I mean, it's amazing. Like, it really is an incredibly special event. I've been to a ton of college football bowl games. This is the coolest one by far. I mean, it really is neat. On the other hand,
why? What makes it that?
Just because of everything that surrounds the day. I mean, the setting is, you know, it's just different than being in a parking lot in suburban Dallas or being, you know, 30 minutes outside of Phoenix, you know, in the middle of the desert. Like, it's just a really special place. And I guess it sounds like I'm kind of denigrating the other places. I'm really not, right? Like, you know, it doesn't really matter the setting of sports stadiums. Like most people, you're just there for the game. But the Rose Bowl's just different. Like, the parade's amazing. The setting's incredible. It is really cool when you start the fourth quarter and it's this beautiful vista. Mm-hmm. Like, I get all that stuff. But time is moving on, right? And so if you can find a way to kind of say, hey, we'll preserve that to the extent that we can, and we acknowledge that there's a specialness. And I would just say, like, I think most people who have been to all of these games would recognize a difference. There's just something special and different about it. It's the oldest one. It's the granddaddy of them all the stuff that Keith Jackson talked about. But I also get, and I think they need to understand, that there is this huge movement afoot in the sport to expand it. And so it sounds like, again, I'm not privy to kind of the information as to exactly what the negotiations were, but it sounds like basically there was an acknowledgement that we get that this is special and important to you, and we'll do the best we can to preserve it going forward. But if you want to be a part of the 12-team playoff, then let's move this along and let's try to find a compromise here. It sounds like that's what happened.
Along with Dave's work on the Big Ten Network, his book, Opening Kickoff, is amazing. Anytime that he's on, I recommend it. If you're someone who loves college football and the history of it, I would highly recommend that you pick it up. If you're thinking of a holiday gift for a football fan in your life, pick it up. It's one of my favorites of all time, The Opening Kickoff, The Tumultuous Birth of a Football Nation. I'm wondering, Dave, when you guys launched Big Ten Network, when you joined the party over there, was there anything that's happened that you foresaw happening, or are you as surprised at the rest of us of the explosion and the way that the game and the way the conferences, specifically the Big Ten, have all changed since you walked in the door?
I could never have seen this coming, and thanks for your kind words, Lawrence. I always appreciate the nice things that you said about the book, but yeah, I could have never seen this coming. I mean, as you know, I'm really in tune with the history of the sport. I love the history of college football and kind of the pageantry that surrounds it all. This has been, well, I mean, so we've been, this is the 16th year of Big Ten Network, but I would say like these last 5 years, more has changed in the landscape of college football in the last 5 years than easily had changed in the previous 30. I mean, it is amazing how many things are different. And certainly in that time since we launched the network, I mean, the different way that we think of college football conferences than we thought of them then. I mean, they're certainly less regional, to say the least, than they were in 2007 when we launched the network. Obviously, the portal and NIL and now an expanded playoff, all of these things. I mean, this is a sport that for years has moved at kind of a glacial pace. And it makes your head spin a little bit to think about how dramatically things have changed here in just a handful of years.
You know what I'm thinking, as long as we're talking history here, and why there may be some real entitlement on the part of the Rose Bowl to believe that it is a little more special than others. Not just the subjective experiences there, but objectively, when we talk about bowl games, that's because of the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl is called that because the Yale Bowl that was built in 1914 was the first bowl-shaped stadium that is still the template for a lot of these modern stadiums, and the Rose Bowl was built off that. We don't call them bowl games if not for the Rose Bowl.
Right, and I do think, like, you know, the Rose Bowl was the first one, and I get, like, they are really protective of their place in history. And I would just also say, like, and again, like, I grew up in the Midwest. Both of you guys did, too, obviously, both Chicagoans. And so maybe it is the lens through which I see the world. But there was something special about turning on the TV on New Year's Day and seeing that and just kind of being like, wow, I mean, that is different. But I do think you also have to acknowledge that day to a certain extent is past. And so to kind of be able to acknowledge its specialness while also seeing that the world has moved on. Right. I think kind of like both those things are, I think you can do both of those things at once, maybe not to everyone's satisfaction. And no one's always going to, you know, you're never going to reach a compromise that everyone feels 100% happy with. That's kind of the nature of compromise, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, the Rose Bowl is different. The Rose Bowl got it all going. And I do think like a little nod to its place in history is appropriate, even though, again, things have changed so dramatically.
Dave, I've been trying to figure out, I talked with Mike Hall about this earlier this week. I've been trying to figure out how Jim Harbaugh has done what he's done and why it feels like it's so quiet. Like if this were any other heritage college football program, if this were Alabama, or if it were, I guess now you could put Clemson in there too, it would be so loud. Like what he's accomplished over the last 2 years. Why has it been quiet?
I think, Lawrence, that when he first got there, of course, it was so loud. He was climbing trees and sleeping over at recruits' houses and drinking milk with his steak and everything he did, you know, taking his shirt off and throwing the football around, everything he did grabbed the media attention and you couldn't help but to kind of, if you were following the bubble that I'm in of college football, you heard about Jim Harbaugh constantly. And the truth of the matter is he wasn't making up any ground on Ohio State. And so it feels like what Jim Harbaugh did, in my opinion, is he just decided that he was going to focus on how can I get my program better? Ohio State was rocking and rolling. They were recruiting at an unbelievable level, and they were competing for national championships, and Michigan wasn't. And Michigan believes that it should be mentioned on that same stratosphere
with Ohio State and Alabama and, you know, recently, of course, Clemson. And that just hadn't been the case here recently. But we're talking about the winningest college football program of all time. And so I think, like, they kind of redoubled their efforts on actually getting better on the field and realized that all that ancillary stuff wasn't doing it. And so they're better. They're better on the line of scrimmage. They got really good coordinators. They kind of went about, hey, how do we make our actual team better? Because publicity isn't necessarily going to do it. So I almost feel like it was a concerted effort to say, like, let's enough with kind of all that other stuff. Let's focus on getting a better football team. And that's what they've done. And I mean, like, especially on the lines of scrimmage, they're better than Ohio State right now. Like, that, the balance of power has shifted a little bit. They're certainly on an equal plane. I think Ohio State's skill position players are still better than Michigan's, but everything else, I mean, Michigan's right there with them. They beat them twice in a row. And now I think you have to say Michigan's got the upper hand in this series. I don't think there's any way you can deny it. That doesn't mean Ohio State couldn't beat them next year. Doesn't mean Ohio State couldn't get into the playoff if USC loses and still win the national championship. But Michigan has drawn even here in this series, and that's pretty staggering, because I would not have thought that 375 days ago.
Dave, last thing. To what extent does it matter that Northwestern's had two really bad seasons in a row? And how has, if at all, how is Pat Fitzgerald going to be held accountable to the standards that he has set there?
Does it matter? I mean, it matters to people who care, Dan, and I do think there are a lot of people who care. It's been bad. I mean, like, let's just be honest here. They've come the last three full seasons of football, like, not counting the 2020 season. I'm not discounting what they did. They were great. They made the Big Ten championship game. They were leading Ohio State at halftime, and they came really close to making it to the Rose Bowl. But the season preceding that and the two since that, they finished in last place in the Big Ten. He lost his longtime defensive coordinator, Mike Hankowitz. The truth of the matter is Pat Fitzgerald is 14-34 as a head coach without Mike Hankowitz in the years that preceded his hiring and in the years since he retired. So he needs to figure out the defense. Now, he fired his defensive coordinator this week, Jim O'Neill. It was overdue. He probably should have done it a year ago, because it was obvious from the very first play of his tenure, when Kenneth Walker went 75 yards untouched for a touchdown, that it wasn't going to work out. It has not gotten any better in the time that he's been there. And now they've slipped a little bit offensively, too. They had a ton of injuries at quarterback over the last couple of years, so perhaps that's part of it. But he had a five-star quarterback in Hunter Johnson and a really high four-star quarterback in Ryan Helinski, and neither one of those guys panned out. And now you're building an $800 million football stadium. So I think it's very reasonable to ask what's going on, particularly because of the two people who preceded him both won Big Ten championships. Gary Barnett won two, and Randy Walker won one. I think the world of Pat Fitzgerald. I think he is a wonderful guy and a great representative of the university. I think he's a really good football coach. But, you know, he's like, his staff's got to get better. So I think this is a really important hire for him, to get back to playing defense the way that they typically had been playing defense, and then to figure it out. Hopefully they can keep their quarterback healthy, maybe go in the portal to reinforce that group. But yeah, I do think it matters, and I do think they have to get better.
How much of that $800 million are you covering? How much of that they asked from the alumni?
Yeah, it's not coming out of my pocket, Lawrence. You know, if I were you, I'd get on the phone with Pat Ryan and ask him that question.
Exactly.
He may have played a more significant role than anyone, but it does look spectacular. And again, like, I don't want to say, like, Pat Fitzgerald's done a really, really good job, right? Like, he's won a bunch of bowl games. I mean, they didn't win their bowl games under Gary Barnett or Randy Walker. Like, Pat Fitzgerald's done a lot of really good things, and he brought a level of consistency to it. But unfortunately, has really slipped. And no one is slowing down. I mean, Wisconsin fired a great coach in Paul Christ and went out and hired a fabulous one in Luke Fickle. Brett Bielema's finally got Illinois going after 10 years where they literally were the worst Power 5 program in the country other than Kansas, which is staggering and hard to believe. But by record, they were. And now I think Nebraska's going to get going under Matt Rhule, and we may lose divisions in the Big Ten. And, oh, by the way, USC and UCLA are coming. So it's a little bit tougher task, but I think Fitz is up to it. But I think this was a first step this week of recognizing that you need to change the MO a little bit.
Dave, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having time for us today.
Okay. Thanks, Lawrence. Thanks, Dan. Take care, fellas.
Thanks, Dave. That's Dave Revson, the lead anchor for Big Ten Network.
And I'm telling you, his book, The Opening Kickoff, I'm not just saying it because he's on the show. It's to me, it is what Blood, Sweat, and Chalk is for college.
I praise.
With a bigger emphasis on the actual history. Like Dave and I sat down and he's one of the first people I asked on House of L. And we just talked because I'm fascinated by University of Chicago football history. And Dave and I just sat there and just riffed on it for 20 minutes. It's awesome.
While he was talking about Northwestern quarterbacks, the Bears have one who we saw last week. And not only did we see him, Justin Fields did too. And he had some interesting things to say about what he saw and also about the Packers quarterback as well. So we'll hear from Justin Fields next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I asked the question, what are we watching on Sunday? And I haven't really gotten an answer yet. I don't know who the quarterback is going to be, and I'm not quite sure with this Bears roster in the teardown mode. We're in the street free agent point of the season.
Tim Boyle.
And the safety.
That's another question. I haven't seen anyone talk about it yet, but you might end up in a situation where you don't have Jaquan Brisker and Kyler Gordon. I think that's likely now.
Adrian Colbert, is that the name?
Yes.
Okay.
Something like that. Not going
to
work here.
Yeah, anymore. Right. But that's you have to sign guys who are out of football to be in football as nominally
for a week.
As the Bears are in. Well, a quarterback that you sign off a practice squad has got to be on your team for 3 weeks, I believe.
Yep.
That's the minimum. So you can get used to having Tim Boyle around for a while. But Justin Fields, I imagine, is going to be a spectator again, and as he should be, because there's just no reason to play him in this game. And he was asked what stood out to him while watching Trevor Siemian quarterback the Bears last week.
It was kind of like, you know, beginning of last year. But, you know, I was just trying to help him as much as can with guys, you know, just their defensive signals and stuff like that, how they're communicating. And, you know, I saw a lot of good stuff from him. You know, there was one play where he checked the ball to Darrington, and he got like a 30-yard gain. I think that was like one of my favorite plays of the game. So, yeah, just stuff like that I can learn from and kind of just boom. All out right now, but you know, I definitely learned a lot from him. Of course, he's been in the league for a good amount of time, and you know, when him and Nate, you know, always, you know, when they have advice, they always share it with me. So, it's great having those two guys in the room for sure.
What about that was notable to you? What made that one of your favorite plays of the day?
You know, just how he got to him, you know, on time. Like, usually you don't get to that check down like on time like that, but just how fast he got to it was you know, very notable to me.
All right. Cool. Where Justin is seeing some stuff and taking from a lesser player something that he can add to his own arsenal to make himself better.
And also, there was this back and forth that Fields had with Dan Wiederer regarding Aaron Rodgers.
Given your connection with Luke, how has your with Getsy?
Okay.
How has your appreciation of Rodgers as a quarterback changed during the time that you've kind of been working with Luke to study an offense and just talking and seeing things that Aaron's done over time?
So how does my appreciation change of Rodgers?
Yeah, what is your level of appreciation for him as a quarterback?
I think he's a great quarterback. He's one of the, you know, greatest quarterbacks to ever play his game. So, I mean, yeah, I really didn't understand the totality of the question.
Does working with Luke help you see some more of the nuances and details of things that Aaron does that maybe you didn't see not working with somebody that was so close with him for so long?
Yeah, for sure. But again, I mean, you just got to look at the talent that, you know, he has as a quarterback. You know, not many people have that arm talent that he does, able to get the ball out fast, able to just make the throws that he makes sometimes. So, but yeah, with the stuff as far as you know, footwork and timing and stuff like that, you can definitely see that. And I think that, you know, does improve a quarterback's game. But, I mean, you can't take away the talent that, you know, Aaron has just because, of course, he had a good quarterback coach. He's, you know, like I said, one of the most talented quarterbacks that to ever play this game. So, you know, of course, Luke made him better. But, I mean, he's of course, talented for sure.
Yes, he is. I do like that Justin's like, I mean, you know, Luke's cool and everything, but the guy was already kind of...
It's Aaron Rodgers,
you know.
I get the question, though.
I think it's a totally valid question.
I understand where Dan was going. Like, now that you know how he works with quarterbacks, what he asks a quarterback to do, when you see Rodgers do some of this stuff so easily or with such versatility or with the kind of... ad libs that he's able to get away with, does that make you appreciate him more? I get it.
I also think that it was interesting the things that he pointed to. Like the things about Rodgers that he pointed to, where he's talking about, you know, ball placement and footwork, which are things that Fields, I'm sure, is still probably working on, trying to get better at. And when we were talking, having the bigger discussion about the dual threat quarterbacks, Rodgers is 10th all time in rushing for quarterbacks. Like, this is a good guy for any quarterback to look at because you could pick little things, but specifically for Fields on the field, that's the type of guy that you want to look at and go, all right, good. He was able to marry some of this stuff where people kind of consider him to be a pocket quarterback because he's such a prolific passer, but he also, I think he's got like 4,500 rushing yards or something like that in his career. How do you use that to the best of your ability where what Rodgers is super good at is the draw in? Like I'm outside the pocket. I might go up the field. I'm drawing the defender in.
And then the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just the draw in. It's delivering on it, anticipating where the scramble rules are sending guys.
And that he's hitting those guys in the hands on the run. The guys, you see a lot of quarterbacks, they end up drawing PI calls. Like Tua this year has done some of this because he doesn't have incredible arm strength. Rodgers used to, not as much now, he still does it, used to hit guys, like if you got beat, if you were a step behind as a DB, it's over. He's going to find that receiver, and usually it was Davante Adams, and he's going to put the ball on him. He doesn't have to wait. The guy doesn't have to shoo away the defender when the ball comes.
No, he sees it the moment, if he's even, he's leaving.
And that's it. And I'm going to throw it, I'm going to make that play. Those are all things that Justin can look at and go, oh, I can do some of this stuff. Let me add that to the collective that is me. But yeah, that's one of the guys whose tape, if I were Fields, I would be looking at. And I'd be like, yeah, I can do some of this.
That's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Dan Bernstein, the Bernstein and Holmes Show, middays Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You know that on Thursdays, that includes Jason Leisure of the Chicago Sun-Times talking Bears at 1 o'clock. So that's next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.